Well, I'm supposed to be working, so I'm, you know, I just try to be available when they need me during the work hours. But also, you know, like with what's going on right now, I guess I do have a little bit of a fear that, you know, there's going to be people that are laid off from work, and I don't want to be one of them. So I don't want to give them any excuse to even think about it, you know, if I can help it. I'm honored that you asked me to share, and it's such a wonderful thing that I can, because I'm working from home, and I've been on so many meetings with people that don't live around me, and it's just really wonderful. I'm looking at this, of course, there's a lot of bad things about what's going on, but there's so many blessings too. And I love being home. I get along with Mickey, and he gets along with me, and you know, everything's peaceful. Thank God. You know, it's just really nice to be home. I'm able to work from home comfortably, and that's another blessing. I'm around my animals. You know, I'm probably more meetings now than I did before we were locked into our house. So anyways, I'm really grateful to that you asked me to share. And I guess I'll just kind of tell my story. Also, I want to tell you that I just celebrated 30 years on Tuesday last week. So, thank you.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And I did it in isolation or whatever, and I shared on Zoom at my home group on my anniversary last Saturday. It was kind of neat because there were a lot of people that attended the meeting and from all over the United States. And they were friends of mine from Las Vegas and just like everywhere from Pennsylvania. From people were on the meeting that I got clean with that knew me when I walked in the doors of Narcotics Anonymous. So it was just really a neat thing, a blessing. So I'll just tell you a little bit about myself. And I'm from Pennsylvania. I'm from Reading, Pennsylvania. I'm from a pretty stable family. They loved me. You know, I have a brother. I had parents, mom and dad, and they gave me everything that I needed. And, you know, it, like looking back and hearing that from so many people, like, you know, us as addicts, like a lot of us came from homes that were loving or that all of our needs were met. And it doesn't matter if we come from that or if we come from a home that was abusive or, you know, that the parents did drugs. Also, it doesn't matter. The disease, like I had the disease of addiction. So that was what chose my path for me to become like addicted to drugs and to have this problem. It doesn't matter where I came from, you know, but I did grow up with things, everything that I needed. I went to high school. I graduated from school. My parents paid for me to go to college. And once I had that freedom, you know, like throughout high school, I answered to my parents. I lived in their house, so I could only go so far with using and drinking and using drugs and just things that I did. But once I went to college, I had complete freedom of my actions. And that's when I really started to get bad in my addiction. And I couldn't continue college. I dropped out because all I wanted to do was party. And when I dropped out, I got a job and after work, I would go to a bar and you know, it just kind of got worse and worse. And I wound up moving to New York City, and I met a pimp, and he took me to New York, and I was working on the streets, and you know, it wasn't about like, I wasn't working on the streets. Like, I didn't go into that thinking, oh, like I need drugs. It was that he promised that we could make a lot of money and I'd have all these things, these material things. And that was what I left my job for and decided to go to New York with him. Material promises of material possessions. And that's what drove my, like, drove me back then, you know. I thought that would make me happy because I wasn't happy. I was never satisfied, and I was always looking outside of myself to make me happy. And I thought, if we could make all this money, that would make me happy. So I said yes, and we wound up there. The first day that I worked out on the street, I got arrested. And I was up there for 7 years. I lived there for 7 years. Five of them was working on the street as a prostitute. I went to jail, in and out of jail, about 130 times. Most of the time, it was like 3 days. I would go through the system and get out like 2 or 3 days later. There were three times where I was there for 3 or 4 weeks. Went to Rikers Island. That was not fun. And as I was working those first 5 years that I was there, I would meet men that I was working with, and they would, of course, a lot of them wanted to do drugs, you know. And so I was doing drugs with them. And, you know, it was getting worse and worse to the point where there were a lot of times where I just couldn't be out there on the street. And there were a lot of times where when I was up there that I did things that were really dangerous. I was with people that pulled guns on me. You know, just thinking like I could have died, you know, really put myself in dangerous situation. By the end of the 5 years, I was so like doing drugs so heavily that I couldn't be out on the street anymore. I was just too paranoid. I couldn't do it. So I met somebody and I started selling drugs, and, you know, it just progressed. That's the main point. Like it progressed. The last 2 years I was with somebody selling drugs. I got so bad that he was bad. But he left me because I was so bad. And I remember the one time, like, it was really kind of my bottom. I hit a bottom way before I really got clean. I hit a bottom in August, and my clean date is in March. So it took about 6 months after I hit that bottom to really get clean. And my bottom, I heard last night something. Your bottom depends on how deep you want to dig. I don't know, like, if that was really kind of profound. I guess I dug kind of deep, you know. I thought that was pretty neat to say that. So anyways, I remember being in a situation where I was so thin. I looked so bad, and people were like so disgusted with me that I was around, and nobody wanted to be around me anymore. I was so bad. And I remember the humiliation and the degradation that I put myself in at that time. And, you know, then like I tried. For the next 6 months, I tried all of those things that it talks about in our basic text, in our, you know, that we tried to move, we tried to do different things, and nothing worked. Nothing worked. I tried all of these things to try to stop using, or try to like stop using as much, or and nothing worked, you know, because it was in my head, the obsession and the compulsion to use. I might be able to like stay away from drugs for a couple of days, and all my head was just talking to me, you know. I couldn't get the thought out of my head. I had to use again. And it lasted about 6 months. And I'll tell you, the last time I used was no different than any other time. The last time I used, the only difference was that I had a spiritual awakening. It wasn't the worst time I used or anything, but I had a spiritual awakening, and I believe it was my higher power who had actually come to me quite often that last year that I used, and show, like, I believe they were glimpses of the truth that I was able to see at the end of my addiction, like the truth of who I had become, what I was doing. Like, I was in so much denial at that time that I couldn't even see how bad I had become, how thin I was, how much I was using. I was in denial, and I believed that what I was doing and how I was living was normal. So anyways, that last year, my higher power came to me and showed me some things. Like the one time I was in front of a mirror and I heard a voice that said, "You're killing yourself. You're going to die." And I knew it wasn't me, and it really scared me because I saw in that mirror what I looked like. And every other time I thought I was looking good. This time I saw how thin I was and how bad I was. And it scared me really bad, and I believed that I was going to die. Well, this last time I used, the spiritual awakening that occurred for me was at the end of the using. As everybody was leaving because the police were coming, I saw the people that were around me, and I saw what I was doing. And, you know, we talk about repeating the same mistakes, expecting different results in that second step, and the word insanity. And I saw what insanity really meant. Like, that was a spiritual awakening for me because, like I said, I thought everything I was doing was normal. But I saw it for what it was. It was insanity. I saw the people around me for who they were. They didn't care about me. They cared about themselves and about using. And I saw that. That was the turning point in my recovery. I mean, in my life that, I said to myself at that moment when I was leaving and I saw that, and I was so disgusted with who I was, where I was, who I was around, what I had become. I was so disgusted. I was done. I surrendered. But I didn't realize I surrendered at that point. It's only like through looking at it in hindsight that I realized that was my surrender to come into the program. So at that point, I said to myself and to my higher power, and I didn't really have a relationship at that time with any God. I believed there was a God, but I had no relationship. I didn't know. And I said, "I'm done. I'm disgusted, and I want to stop, and I don't ever want to use again. I'm done. I'm done." And for me to say that, I was so scared to say that because I really didn't believe that I could do it. All the other times I might've said that, "I'm not going to do this again." And I would, as soon as, like, you know, if something happened that, I was out of drugs, if something happened, if I was in jail, "I'm not going to do this again." And as soon as my situation changed, I was doing it again. So to say those words at the end of that last time using scared me because I really didn't believe I could do it, but I meant it. And I felt it in every ounce of my being. I really felt like I meant it. So the thing is that when you make a decision in the third step, it teaches us when we make a decision, it implies making action, taking action. And I didn't know at that time anything about the third step, but looking at it, hindsight, I took action. And I didn't just like go home, go back to where I was living and sleep it off and get up and continue doing what I was doing at this time. I meant it. And I didn't want to use again, and I wanted to change. And so when I woke up a day later, after I slept for 24 hours or so, I made changes. I started to make arrangements to change where I was living and move back to my mom's house in Pennsylvania. So that was the end of my 7 years in New York. And I moved back to my mom's house, and I was a mess. And I left everything, like everything, all my friends, and you know, this, it's it took 2.5 hours to drive from my mom's house to New York. So the thing is that, yes, I knew where the drug dealers were while I was at her house when I moved there. But the thing was, you know, like a geographical change of location. It kind of worked for me because I really meant I wanted to stop using. And I would have 2.5 hours drive to think about, do I really want to do this? So, you know, I was really scared. I didn't want to use, and I could have very easily. Because that's still all I was thinking about. But so I moved, and my mom helped me. She took me to my first meeting. We found a meeting, an NA meeting. The first meeting I made was on Saturday night in Reading, Pennsylvania. I walked in to the room. She gave me money to buy a basic text. And I bought my basic text. I walked into that room, and I don't remember anything that was said. There were a lot of people there, and I'm friends with, still to this day, quite a few people that were in that room in my first meeting. Thankfully, you know, that's a gift. But I just remember hearing the readings, and that first time hearing the readings, I always thought I was different. I didn't think I was from this planet. I didn't think there was anybody in this world that ever like was like me, that thought like me. I felt alienated. I felt alone. I felt so different. When I heard those readings at that meeting, those words resonated through me. I realized at that moment that I had found people that could describe who I was. Words that could describe who I was and what I was thinking and feeling, how I was feeling. That was a miracle. And I was so excited to find that. I took the basic text home and I started reading through it. I was so excited because the words just were like, they described who I was. I couldn't believe finding something like that. And it kept me coming back. I came back probably every night for a while to a meeting. I made friends, a lot of friends that had the same time as me. We come in here and a lot of us come in here into the program, and we lost a lot of time using. So I think I had the mentality of maybe a 14-year-old person, even though I was 29. I was really immature. I didn't have social skills. And it's not that like people didn't try to teach me those things when I was growing up, but I just didn't hear them. I didn't hear them. I didn't learn them. So I was immature. I was rude. I didn't know how to talk to people. I didn't know how to describe my feelings. I just showed up. And other people just like me were in the same situation, and we just hung out together and accepted each other. And it was really uncomfortable, but we just like, we hung on to each other. And after the meetings, we would go out to the diner and, or, you know, to a restaurant together. We would do things together. We would, we came back to New York all together to see concerts. You know, we went to service workshops together. We did a lot of things together, and we created a strong bond of friendship. You know, I also got involved with service immediately. I joined a home group that was near my house, and they gave me this little assignment. They made me the secretary of the home group, and they gave me an assignment to rewrite all of the minutes. And looking back on it, I really believe that they didn't need me to rewrite their minutes, but they gave that to me just to keep me busy and feel part of and important. And I didn't see that at the time, but it certainly did. It made me feel part of, it made me feel important, and it gave me a reason to keep coming back. That first group is where I met Bill Allen, that you all know. He sponsored a lot of the guys that were in my home group, and I met him. And my first sponsor that I got, her name was Debbie. And I wanted to talk about my sponsors. You know, Debbie, she had a year more clean time than me. And at that time, you know, there wasn't a lot of clean time. I think the most clean time in our area was 5 years. And most people had, they were new up to 3 years. That was, and we were a lot smaller than we are today. Now there's so many meetings in our area and so many addicts and so many people that have substantial clean time. We've certainly grown since I've gotten clean, which is an awesome thing. But anyways, Debbie, I think my higher power, put her there just for me. She was loving, caring. She listened to me. She didn't judge me. She was very patient. And I talked to her pretty much every day. I went through my first three steps with her. She sat there and listened to me while I would go from crying about something to laughing and not being able to stop laughing. And my emotions were just crazy. I see people that come in that have the same thing. You know, we hide our emotions by using, and then when we stop using, they're out of control for a while, you know, and that's normal. So Debbie and I, you know, she really helped me. She was very loving, and she was pretty much the first female that I trusted, because I really didn't trust. I had friends, but like I kept them. I wasn't intimate. Like I didn't share with a lot of females about myself and things that were going on. I didn't trust them. And she was the first one that I really could trust. And I hung out with a lot of guys because I was kind of scared of having relationships with females, with women. And there were a lot of things, there were a lot of lessons that I learned over the first few years of my recovery that really shaped me into who I am. And, you know, like you come in here with lacking spiritual principles and social skills and just common knowledge that people have, and you learn so much. The one lesson that I learned, after a meeting, this one guy that I was friends with had a video that he wanted everybody to go to somebody's house and watch this video. And I volunteered my mom's house. So I was so proud that all these people were going to come back to my mom's house and watch this video with me and at her house. And we all came home after the meeting. We went into her basement. She had her basement was fixed up, and there was a TV and a living room down there. And my brother and his girlfriend were sitting there watching a movie. We came in, we just took over the room, and everybody sat down and we put this video in. And it was a porn video with animals. And my brother was horrified. His girlfriend was horrified. And I'm looking, I was so proud that I had all my friends there. And we were doing, you know, they came to my house, and I looked around and I realized that there were no females there in the room except my brother's girlfriend. All these people that I had come to my mom's house were men. And we were watching a porn video, and something inside of me said, this isn't right. You know, and like, it was my first lesson. One of my first lessons that I learned was, you know, I didn't like this. I didn't like the feeling of being there. It wasn't comfortable, and I knew it wasn't right. So it kind of, you know, I realized that I needed to work on relationships with females more and try to hang out with women more. And, you know, after I saw that, like, from awareness comes change. So, you know, it was just like the first couple of years of recovery were just things like that, that happened to me, that I realized that I don't like this about myself. And then once I realized that, like, I would work on changing that. I think that's part of the second step is watching, like, realizing how you're feeling inside, getting in touch with that, and then watching other people and how they act and what you like and what you don't like in other people. You see that in yourself, and you're able to use that to change. But going on, you know, I met Mickey after I was here for a little while in a service workshop, and I decided to move to New Jersey and from Pennsylvania. And I had 3 years clean. I moved down to Atlantic City, New Jersey. I moved in with Mickey, and we had an apartment, and I changed sponsors to another woman named Brenda. And I wanted to share that what I learned from this sponsor. We did my fourth step together. She came to my house, and we spent about an hour going over my fourth step. And you know, before that fourth step, I realized that I really didn't have a lot of compassion and empathy for other people. And watching my sponsor, Brenda, listen to me for hours doing a fifth step with her. And she cried with me, she laughed with me, and she listened intently while I shared with her the most intimate details of my life. And she loved me, and I felt safe. And I watched her, and she was a power greater than myself. She had the most intense amount of empathy and compassion and love for me while I did that fifth step. And that was so attractive to me that I wanted that. And that was a big, huge change of my life, that once I realized that I didn't have that and I wanted that, my life started changing. And I started working on being more caring, empathetic, and compassionate. And that, I found, was the secret to happiness rather than material things. Caring about others, caring and sharing about with others and having relationships with others, that was the key to happiness. That's a spiritual principle to love. You know, it took me a while, of course, but, you know, working on that and like going through the eighth and ninth step. But that is the most important thing. All of our spiritual principles roll up into loving other people, having love for ourselves and for other people. That was like a really great experience for me. You know, just like going through and realizing like all of these spiritual awakenings that occurred in my life. Through my recovery, through these 30 wonderful years of my recovery, I have experienced so many things. Like, I've experienced the death of my father, and a couple other very close relatives. And you never know how you're going to react when things are really scary and there's so much grief and you don't know how you're going to react. It's like a lot of people have reservations that say, if this happens, I don't know if I can stay clean. But you know what? Through experiencing death and hard times, what I realized was that just being here and doing what we do in this program and making this type of life a habit of living this way and relying on a higher power, knowing, having faith, because I've experienced it over and over again, that when I do rely on my higher power and when I do try to live in God's will, not self-will, things work out the way they're supposed to, even if they're not the way I want them or the way I thought that I wanted them. They work out to be the best outcome. And today, like by caring about other people, the outcome that I would prefer might not be what is the best for me or gaining the most for me. It's what I wish today, because like I love people and I have love in my heart today, is the best outcome is that it, you know, that it helps the most people or like our earth, you know, like recycling or just doing the right thing, you know, to the right thing, not being greedy and caring about material possessions and power. You know, I don't care about power. I just would like to respect myself. And once I respect myself, other people kind of start to respect ourselves. You know, I found that. But I, you know, I did get my bachelor's degree. I went back to college and I did go back and get my bachelor's degree in accounting. I've held the same job since I've been down in New Jersey. I'm the accounting manager of my department. People have respect me now than so much more than before, because like I didn't have respect for myself. And that was something that like got better and better over the years that I've been here. The love that I have for myself, and it's not always like I'm very critical of myself, but I really do know that like we're humans and we do have defects. And I'm okay with my defects today on most days. You know, it hurts me when I hurt other people. And I'm pretty quick to catch them when I'm wrong. And I do eventually usually go back and apologize, because it frees me and it makes me feel better. And it relieves the guilt and shame that I might be feeling, because I don't like to be in that today. You know, over the years, like I've grown up in here, I've developed a lot of friends, very intimate friends. People care about me today. You know, I, my life is very good. And I really owe it to Narcotics Anonymous. That's all. I'm done.
Thank you so much.